Coming to the Greater Green Bay Area live from the WGBW studios at the City Deck Landing and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. And here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Well, thank you very much. Welcome back to hour number two of the Mayor and Mino Show here on a Wednesday morning, coming your way from downtown Green Bay. Alyssa was just great, wasn't she? And like I said, talk about great talent in this area.
And a great company and just a culture that she's bringing to kind of an older company, right? I mean, you got to admit, Associated Bank's been around forever. And, you know, her and some more people in her generation are saying, hey, look, you know, let's get out to the community. So today, and many businesses do this, and if you are, and if your company does do these outreach programs in the community, let us know. I mean, we
absolutely
like to,
we'll publicize it.
Right,
we'll no
talk
question.
About you and thank you for what you're doing.
You
I
bet.
Mean,
community
I
show.
Mean, we start our show with this Tina Turner, simply the best, and it's because you know U.S. News and World Report chose Green Bay as the best city to live, and a lot of things go into to factoring that. But one of them is just the corporate giving, and many, many businesses do that. And Associated is doing that today with their day of service, deploying 1,000 people in the community at a number of nonprofits, Boys and Girls Club, you know, the Paul's Pantry, and at the new community shelter. And so it was great having her on, and she talked a lot about that, and then she also obviously talked about the culture and what she wants to do here in Green Bay and why she lives here. And we also talked about the EAA, but now we're getting into a little bit more serious. You have a special guest.
Very special guest.
John's here.
My buddy John. How you doing, John?
I'm well.
It's good to see you.
Thank you.
And when you say you're well, you don't throw that out just flippantly. I mean, you've battled some things, and you're well.
I'm more of a mess than I let on.
Okay. Well, you've always been a little bit of a mess, but that's, you know.
Well, you're looking good, and you've been through a lot, and we're going to talk about that. You hail from a life of military.
Yes, sir.
30 years?
30 years.
Just retired?
Just retired.
God bless you.
Do you still have your motorcycle and sidecar?
I sure do.
He has the coolest motorcycle and sidecar, like Army olive drab, right?
No, I got a new one.
Oh, that's right. It's like bright red now or something.
Red, yes, sir.
That's right. You and your gorgeous new bride.
Yep.
Very nice. Cool. Nice. Well, John, let me give you a little bit of, I'll let you talk more about it, John, but Jim, John and I got to be friends. I don't know how or when. Do you, John?
I can't recall when we met.
Me either. But anyway, he was instrumental at getting me to Afghanistan.
Yes, sir.
In Kandahar, right outside of Kandahar City, which was an amazing experience, other than flying into the wrong airport and that whole thing. But it was an amazing experience, and you were with Civil Affairs, 432nd Civil Affairs Battalion, which is based out of Green Bay, and which is an extraordinary unit, because I think what they do, and John, back me up or disagree, I think it's one of the most underrated entities in the United States Army. Because, you know, you don't have to be carrying an M16 and kicking in doors and, you know, grabbing people and detaining people and getting in firefights every day to be, first of all, in very, very hostile territory, in very serious areas, in very precarious situations. And what you, and I'm not even the word guys, because so many women soldiers mm-hmm. were involved. What you guys did was so instrumental. You talk about the old winning the hearts and minds. You guys literally went into hostile territory and did that, trying to help these people. And I think that's the one thing about our military. When they go to war, mm-hmm. that story isn't told enough, how much we try to do for the local population.
You really don't hear about all the great stuff that we've done, and it's kind of unfortunate. All the, trying to bring normalcy and prosperity back to the populace.
To chaos or whatever, right?
Yeah, order to chaos.
Order to chaos.
Correct. So we've done everything from training police, training firefighters, equipping firefighters, building schools, building clinics, working with different levels of government. You name it, we've done it.
Wow. And they're receptive to that. I mean, they're looking for that guidance. They just, how come they don't, let me ask you this. How come they don't know about good schools, good policing, good infrastructure? Is that just the...
You mean the Iraqis in Afghanistan?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, if you think about those regimes that were there before, they were kind of closed up and didn't let their populace see what's going on outside the rest of the world. So they have no idea what is available to them.
I will say Iraq civilians did, Afghanistan's did not. What would you say?
More so in Iraq. Yeah. Iraq was more towards Western country, but Afghanistan, you know, it's back to the Stone Age in some areas.
But obviously very receptive to a better way of life.
Oh, yes, for sure.
That, and thank you for doing that. And John was telling me a little bit about you this yesterday, I guess, when we were driving down to Oshkosh. You gave your life to that. Not your life. I mean, you're still here. You're talking about it. I mean, your career to that. That's what I meant
to
say.
So deployed to Iraq twice, Afghanistan once, and Kosovo once. So.
Why the interest in the military? I mean, I see some of it's declining. It seems like the Marines are holding their own, but it seems like...
recruitments are down. I saw a story on that recently.
Yeah.
So I didn't get in until I was 24, and it was just always something that interests me, and I had a lot of... My father was actually old for how old I was, and he was actually in World War II.
Okay.
My dad had me when he was 50.
Oh. Huh.
And so a lot of uncles, military, and it's just always something that's been back there and I've thought about. And then you know, I wanted a way to pay for the rest of college, so let's join the Army National Guard, and that's where I started.
Wow. And 30 years later.
Yes, sir.
Wow. So back up here a little bit then. We're going to talk about Iraq. What years were you there, John?
I was in Iraq 03-04
okay.
And 07-08.
So right at the very beginning and kind of correct. Winding her down a little bit.
Correct.
Okay. Let's talk about a topic that I think is going to be very front and center over the next few years. And I think and again, correct me if I'm wrong in any of this, John, please. I think it's going to be the next Agent Orange type of scenario in regards to, you know, at first in Vietnam, people are like, oh, this stuff's going to help you. It's going to help you. It's going to get rid of the foliage. And it's going to help, you know, spot the Viet Cong and things like that. And it's totally safe, guys. It's totally safe. Don't worry about it. And then years later, all these things were happening with different types of cancers and diabetes and different things. And it's like, oh, yeah. Actually, that wasn't very safe. And this is really causing problems for people. And I think the burn pits in Iraq could very possibly be in that same situation. The veterans that are around them could be in the same situation. I hate to say that bluntly, but what's your opinion on that, John?
Well, it's happening. It's happening now. And as you know, I'm a stage 4 cancer survivor. And I have a memo from my Army ear, nose, and throat doctor that basically says I was exposed to something on one of my deployments.
And you guys didn't know what were in those burn pits, right?
Oh, we had no clue.
No clue. Well,
we didn't think about it at all.
Right.
So for our listeners and for your co-host, the burn pits, like what are they? What are they used for? Tell me about them.
Just a means to get rid of waste from Army and contractors. Just basically piled everything not needed into a pit and started it on fire and let it go.
But some people think there could have been some radium type things. Which is extremely toxic type materials too, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, the batteries, medical waste, everything was put into these burn pits.
Wow.
And they had to man them.
All right. And you're breathing in the fumes they're putting off. I'm not an ENT guy, but I would think there's something there.
Correct. Yep.
And if we tell a story about your good friend, Chris,
yep.
Who, I won't say his last name if you don't want to, but he was, how old was he when he developed cancer?
He was 50.
50, okay. Healthy as could be.
Oh,
very, I mean, both you guys.
Yeah.
Big, strong, healthy, completely in shape guys, and they both end up with serious cancers, and Chris passes away from it.
Oh.
You can't tell me two healthy guys like you two guys that all of a sudden, when they come back from Iraq a few years later, develop serious cancers. You just can't tell me the law of averages are with that. Don't you agree, John?
I totally agree. There's a lot of us out there, and the numbers are growing, unfortunately.
So, but it's not being covered up. Is that a fair statement?
It's not being covered up.
Okay, so John really believes this is the next Agent Orange, and you know, the more he talks about it, I would agree that this is something that, I don't know, should have been managed better. I don't know how you could have been managed better, but the VA, they're being receptive to your concerns?
So I medically retired from the Army, even though I had over 20 years, I ended up medically retiring, and I was taken care of. Because I medically retired, I went through the VA process on the front end of my retirement, so that's already been taken care of, and I'm considered a 100% disabled veteran.
Okay, so I mean, I wish you were cancer-free. That would make me happier than being a disabled
person. I've been cancer-free since I went through treatment.
Oh, you are? Okay, yep. So the stage 4, you're cancer-free now,
yep.
And you're getting checked. That's good news. And how are you guys doing about getting the word out to other people that may have what you had and maybe not make the correlation like maybe you did or other people have that? Wait, were you in Were you near the burn pits?
So there's a lot of organizations out there that are helping veterans, VFW, American Legion, all those. But there's it's a little bit different from our forefathers, where we as veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan are looking out for each other more and helping each other more and talking about it more. It's not so...
And even social media helps that.
Totally.
I mean, I know a lot of guys, when they came back from Vietnam or something, and they had written down somebody's, you know, address in Massachusetts or so. Oh, we're going to get together. And then they never do. Yeah. And there was no communications until literally social media came about. And that's when a lot of guys finally started hooking up. But you guys were almost born and raised with that. So that was your normal mode of communication. And I think you guys do a really great job in keeping an eye on each other via that way, don't you?
Yeah, the brotherhood and sisterhood is definitely different from previous eras, which is a great thing, because we look out for each other and help each other out.
Yep. So, what about the, I can't remember the name of it now, that they come in the VA, is it PACT Act?
The PACT Act.
PACT Act. Could you talk a little bit about that, in case there's any veterans out there or family members of veterans? We've got 2 minutes for this segment, but go ahead, John, then we'll continue it when you're back. But
sure.
Go ahead with the PACT Act.
So the PACT Act actually covers Vietnam, the Gulf War, and post 9/11. But it's just an act that it says that some of these illnesses that and cancers that people are getting are now presumptive. There's no more having to make a connection. If you're in Iraq or Afghanistan and you end up with this disease, it's combat and service connected. There's no trying to prove that.
Or, you have to wait for years to prove it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some people that have struggled with proving the connection between their diseases and their service, but now the PACT Act eliminates that.
That's a big thing.
Yes.
Huge.
Because you shouldn't have to go in playing defense.
Correct.
I mean, you served our country, you got sick, and now it's like, well, this is what you think. Well, we don't think that. So the PACT Act really, it brought everybody to the start line, at least.
Correct.
All right. Well, that's a good thing.
I almost think that in some ways the VA or whomever, you know, really was embracing this said to themselves, okay, you know what? We did a disservice to a lot of the Vietnam vets. We really did. And some guys died because of our reluctance, I guess, to give in and admit what happened. And I think they're kind of saying to themselves, we're not going to let that happen again. It's just like the Vietnam vets were, I think one of their great things was, never again will a veteran come back from war and be neglected.
Right.
And they've done a wonderful job on that. So the Vietnam vets, that's a pretty strong unit right now. And they're...
John, I want to talk about the good things that are going on.
Yes.
There's a lot of good things happening,
sure.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, stick around.
Awesome. Mind of the Mayor with my friend John, Iraq, Afghanistan vet, talking about all kinds of things over there. We'll be back with more on Mind of the Mayor right after this. Welcome back. 97.9 FM, 1590 AM, WGBW. The Mayor and Mino coming your way here on a beautiful Wednesday morning. My buddy John, Iraq, Afghanistan veteran here, talking about some of the things that Iraq vets may be dealing with over the next few years. And we don't want to alarm people. We don't want to scare people. But we just want to get the word out there that there is help if there are issues. And John, you went through it, like you said, stage 4 cancer. And then you just showed me I would never notice your jaw. Is actually part of your femur bone. Is that correct?
Fibula.
Fibula. Okay. I always get those mixed up. That's what kept me out of med school. I couldn't
out what the... I'm sure that's what kept you
out. That was the thing that kept me out. I couldn't remember the different bones in the leg. But Jim, I know you had to run to the men's room again, but...
I went to get the coffee you brought in the... What was it called? The Cure?
Oh, Craig's or something?
Yeah, but you didn't bring any coffee, so... That's
it's in my car.
I don't believe that.
It's in my car. Trust me.
The coffee is... Anyway, I had to go back to John.
Did you hear
what
we were talking about?
Yes, a little bit with his jaw.
His jaw. He looks totally normal. Yes, I mean...
Absolutely, yeah.
That's his femur.
Fibula.
Fibula. It's his fibula.
I walked back in on the medical school. And if you're trying to justify why John Minos in a medical school, that is...
That's what kept me out.
I can give you 99 other reasons.
That was like the last question on the test.
Anyway, back to
John. Name the three bones in your leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. But and that was from the treatment, correct, John?
So, yeah, in 2020, a radiation damaged my jaw to the point where it was dying. I had osteoradionecrosis, it's called. So they removed the left half of my jaw and replaced it with my fibula and titanium. So this is all, whole left side is fibula.
Isn't that incredible?
Wow.
Where'd you get that done? San Antonio, right?
No, Mayo Clinic in Rochester.
I remember that. Then you stayed in like Eau Claire, La Crosse or someplace.
Well, I was stationed on Fort McCoy my last tour. So I was, yep.
I mean, I remember that was a tough recovery. We were in contact a little bit. That was a tough recovery.
That was, cancer treatment sucked, but this one sucked also. But it was like getting hit by a truck because they do everything at once. They remove your fibula. They do the jaw.
To be sitting here right now looking this good, hey, Jim? I mean, yeah. It's like, come on. You look like you're in 100 times better shape than either of us.
Well, that doesn't take much. But yeah. How's your leg?
You don't need a fibula if you didn't know that. So
I didn't.
That's another one I got wrong.
That's okay. That's true.
So, yeah, there's just two nubs and you don't need a fibula.
Incredible.
Okay. All right. Hey, so you are a cancer survivor,
yes,
right?
Sir.
That's, I can say that.
Yep.
And the cancer that you experienced was through working the burn pits.
I didn't actually work the burn pits. I was just in the vicinity.
I kind of meant that.
Let me just jump in real quick. How far did you have to be from the burn pits to still be affected, do you think?
So that stuff just gets in the air.
Right.
Okay. I mean,
that's pollution, right? We got a company here on the far west side of Green Bay that people complain about. You know, I'm just saying that I think fumes can go a distance. Okay. So I don't know if it's how many miles it is, but. And you were diagnosed with this. You went and sought treatment. You were well taken care of through the VA. Is that a safe statement?
I was well taken care of on the Army side. So I didn't. You don't deal with the VA until you're out. So all my stuff was.
That would make you a veteran. Okay, that makes sense. All right. So but the Army took good care of you.
Okay. Yeah. I'm here.
All right. So even though you had those challenges, suffered those challenges, which is, I can say that the life that you spent 30 years in the military, would you recommend that to your best friend's kid or your kid?
Oh, for sure. It was a phenomenal experience. And, having a chance to work with, young people and develop them as leaders and to help the civilian populace in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, just a great experience.
That's awesome. Tell us about some of the highlights of your 30-year career. I mean, you talked about the leadership skills you learned and the camaraderie. You mentioned that to me off air a little bit, but some experiences that you really enjoyed.
Sure. So I was in Afghanistan 2011, 2012. My job there was I was a liaison and mentor to the governor of Kandahar and his staff. So,
cool.
Yeah, the birthplace of the Taliban. And I was working with the governor there to help his government give the people the needs that they had.
And then getting in and training them on things that we kind of take for granted here.
Totally.
I know.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
People don't really, I mean, your job as the mayor, all the different things that you had your hands in that make the city work. People don't really think about that and the requirements to get that job done.
Well, and it's not that tough of a job over here because the talent pool that we have here, right? And we had like the best chief of police, fire chief, finance, and you had to create all those people as part of your mission.
They're there to some extent, but not obviously to the extent of what we have here.
Well, one of the things though, and John, you can expound on this as much as you want, how much did you deal with, and I'm just basing it on, we got 2 minutes here for this, but in dealing with one of the translators in Iraq at Camp Liberty, and she told her parents that she was working as a domestic for a multimillionaire family someplace because she was so afraid for them to know she was working with Americans. So you had to kind of break down that barrier as well, or kind of tiptoe around it, I would imagine, right, in civil affairs?
Well, we saw that in Afghanistan when we left, and there were so many people that were left behind that worked with us that are now targets. So.
Wow. I heard they were doing everything. I mean, even on Facebook, they're trying to find people, all those kinds of things that worked with you guys.
Oh yeah, they're tenacious in trying to find people that helped us out.
Not a bright spot. I mean, a lot of bright spots in our military. A lot of bright spots. But that wasn't one of the best, right?
When we abandoned.
I know
those
some
people.
Of your friends were there, and they
I'm out now, so I can say whatever I want.
Say whatever you want, buddy.
You're good. We're good.
No, that wasn't a good exit strategy, to say the least.
You know, I had a guy from Vietnam who was part of the embassy evacuation, and he was a gunner in a helicopter, Marine, and he still remembers flying around and seeing those people in that long line in the embassy courtyard waiting for more helicopters to come in, and he knew there were no more coming in. And he had such flashbacks then when he saw that in Afghanistan.
I bet.
He said that just broke his heart like you can't even believe. And some of those people were wonderful. I mean, the people that you introduced me to in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the mayor's office.
Yep.
I mean, and then they almost got assassinated, right?
One of them did.
One of them did.
Yeah. So some bad guys got some guns in the mayor's office and shot it up just after I left.
I remember one time I thought I uncovered some terrorists, and I went and told John. We were at that little base, Camp Nathan Smith. Turns out it was the guys to clean the latrine. Remember that?
And don't forget, I saved your life over there.
Which time? Twice. We got to set a quick break.
Well, keep him out of medical school. Keep him out of the military.
Right,
he's a great radio talk show.
Welcome back. The Mayor and Mino here on a Wednesday morning. Dealing with a friend of mine that is just outstanding. I shouldn't say meeting with a friend of mine, John Kramer, Iraq, Afghanistan vet, 30-year Army veteran. And we could do about a six-hour show just sitting here and talking. And
John sharing his story with us. And a guy who gave his career, 30 years, to the military and got sick. I mean, he just did, and it could be probably was from the burn pits.
Not even a question.
And suffered cancer, and is now, it's in remission, and he's healthy now. And we're talking about, the military. You read about, some of our numbers are down, not with the Marines, but in the Army, the Air Force, Coast Guard. The recruitment is down, and I'm not sure why, and nobody really knows why. But he would recommend this to anyone, to his own
despite
kids,
everything,
right? To his own kids, which I think is great to hear from a guy who spent 30 years there. But now that he's retired and he's obviously very healthy now, and has a few toys with his motorcycle and a sidecar, which
we need one.
Yeah, I know that would be cool.
I would ride the sidecar.
You're darn right you would. But so what are you doing now? I mean, are you still in connection with the military? Is there anything you're enjoying from a career in the military?
So I'm enjoying the retired life as much as I can right now.
Good.
But this fall I'm starting school back up at the tech here. So I already have a degree, but
Jim teaches there.
I do.
Oh my goodness!
If you take some business classes,
he's going to be your guy.
I'll just take him just for the sake of sitting in one of his classes.
So far, you'd get a pretty good grade.
And where do you want to take that, John?
So I'm taking some digital photography classes and a bunch of other kind of techie media classes for the fun of it. Like I said, I already have a degree, but I'm taking advantage of it's called the Veterans Readiness and Employment Program. So basically, what it does is it completely pays for school, and then there's also a subsistence allowance that you get. So I'm basically in school and being paid while I'm in school.
Awesome.
So taking advantage of that.
You deserve it.
You bet.
Absolutely. Thanks. You paid your price. What are some of the things, John, when people ask, what was Iraq like, or what was Afghanistan like? People ask me that, and I'm like, I was there for 2 minutes. I was there for a minute versus, these people are there forever. So I can only give them a snapshot. But for a guy that spent so much time in Iraq and Afghanistan, And saw both sides, the very beginning and then kind of the surge era. What can you say in a thumbnail description of what those two places were like?
It was hot.
It was so hot. It was so bleeping hot.
It's really hard to answer that, I think.
And I agree. It's hard to.
It was just a phenomenal experience to see what another completely different culture lived like. And to be exposed to that. And one thing that was interesting about Iraq especially is to be around like the Temple of Ur.
Oh my gosh.
That, Abraham.
6,000 years old.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Did I tell you about that, Jim? We went to the Temple of Ur.
No, wow.
And I I took a thermometer with me. Somebody asked me to bring a thermometer that went to over 120. But anyway, so I put it in the Humvee. We came down for the Temple of Ur. I want to say it was 132.
Yeah.
The thermometer was registered.
So we were at the spot where Babylon supposedly was. I mean, there's just the history in itself was
incredible.
Amazing. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. The Euphrates River that's all over the Bible and these things. I mean, what really makes you think is how young our country is. Jim, you're a huge Revolutionary War person, and you said if you could be reincarnated, you'd come back as one. But that was only 250 years ago or whatever. We're talking 6,000 years ago. And, I mean, it's crazy. But the thing that with Afghanistan, especially, John, I thought is that, I mean, I had guys tell me that when they would first go to a village, the Afghans asked if they were Russian because they just didn't have any news.
They have no connection to the rest of the world. And that's part of what those regimes do is they keep them isolated from the rest of the world so they don't see the opportunities that are out there.
But you brought those opportunities.
We did our best to, yes.
Yeah. Schools, police,
yep.
Better government. It's too bad some of it didn't stick. And with all the effort you put into it, but a lot of it, I think just sometimes, you know, this ignorance is bliss, right? But I think if people are aware, you may not see it right away, but down the road you may. And I think that you planted seeds, which I think is like just admirable that you and your team did that.
Yeah, I hope it ends better than it's been going lately in both these countries. But you're right. It at least it planted a seed, and more so in Iraq, it just gave the people there an opportunity to see what the rest of the Western world is like.
Right.
I got to show you for Jim or John took me to lunch one day in Afghanistan. Here's me with the chefs.
So that's where I saved his life.
John's showing a picture. Did they not have silverware? John doesn't eat with his, he didn't use silverware in the States.
Did that guy ever washed his apron?
So John wanted to have some Iraqi or Afghani raw vegetables and dairy, and I stopped him, and that's where I saved his life.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We're working on it here, too.
But you know, we're talking about the governor over there. He went to school in Madison for a while, right?
He did.
That's incredible that he alone has seen the light, right? If he went to school, you said Switzerland and here?
So he came out of Afghanistan through Switzerland and into Canada, but ended up in the United States, and he went to Madison for a graduate degree in agriculture. So the amazing part is that he actually went back to help his people.
Right. With a price on his head like you can't believe.
Oh. Yeah, he's actually back in Canada now.
Okay.
But after he was the governor, he went on to be the chancellor of the Kandahar University.
Nice.
Which is another dangerous job.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to show you one more. Were one of those two guys assassinated?
The guy on the right.
I'll show you a picture. That's the day we're together, and that guy was later assassinated.
Wow.
Can you tell that story, John?
So, like I said a little bit earlier, it was about a month after I left, and so the security at the gate to get into Governor Kandahar's office was pretty thorough, and we actually had a airport quality detector.
Right.
But the Afghanis had pistols in their shoes, and they got two guns in the governor's office inside, and they shot up the office, and a good friend of mine that came to my wedding party that we had, Colonel retired Hicks, Kevin Hicks, he got shot going in trying to help out.
His hooch was basically right next to yours, right?
What's that?
His hooch was basically right next to yours?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's a pretty scary time for them, but they ended up clearing out the two guys and taking them out.
I mean, that's the thing. Going in, having been from Afghanistan, going back, knowing—I mean, you dealt with some people here in politics, Jim. You didn't like or whatever, but there wasn't a price on your head. Think about that every day. That there's a huge price on your head every day you go to work.
I was going to say that. I think we complain. I think Americans, you know, and I love them, but we complain a lot because talk about they don't know the good side. I don't think sometimes we know.
We don't exactly
the bad side.
We don't know we don't really realize the opportunities that we have and how great we have it over here until you're over there in Iraq or Afghanistan and even Kosovo.
Well, and just we take a lot of stuff for granted in America, and you know we're very fortunate. We had great leaders, you know, 250 years ago that said, "Look, you know, we don't want England controlling us, right? We want our own country and to be governed by the people, and those are all good things." But I, you know, John and I were even talking about that on the 4th of July. We did a show, and I just think we really need to step back and look at that once in a while because it's tough out there. I mean, we are very blessed, and I, you know, thank God for people like you that try to take that message and help other countries. And I don't know if we can be the world police, you know, I don't know, but I think we can be the world educator, you know,
Totally. I don't know if it's our job to to be the world police either, but you're exactly right to be the educator and show other countries what they can be. Obviously, we have our challenges here, and there's things that aren't going as well as we'd like.
Right.
But it's vastly better than other places.
And we did a project one time. We brought him over with Casey Plowman.
Yep. Was,
you know, good friend of yours. Yep. and ours. And we went to Baghdad, and we brought tons of school books. But all the local schools donate nice. School books for the Department of Education. And we're right there at the airport, and he was looking at one of the books, I remember, and he goes, oh, one of our students will be so excited to get this book. And I go, oh, well, you know what? There's better ones. That one, you had doodling all over it and whatever. He says, no. He said, you don't understand. One of our students, to see that an American student had used this book and had whatever, he says,
oh, that's cool.
That will mean a lot to this person. That's like, could be like a treasure. He said, I guarantee you, at the end of the year, he or she isn't giving that book back. They'll save that as memento because they admire admire, but also are so envious of American school kids, how they could go to school wherever they want, whenever they wanted. Great teachers, great facilities, you know, great things like that. That's the side of it that I don't think that word gets out enough, that, you know, it's always like, oh, we don't like Americans or whatever, whatever. You'd be shocked at the young people, especially, who would give anything to be an American.
Exactly. The younger generations over in Iraq, Afghanistan, Kosovo all got it more, and they're more connected than some of the older folks. So they saw what opportunities they could have.
And what are your hopes for? You know, you spent some time there. What do you see a future? I know some of those countries are slipping back a little bit. I mean, what do you a guy that spent your career trying to?
That's a can I just jump in? With the Taliban in control, nothing good. I'm sorry. Nothing good.
No.
Iraq, maybe, but right. Afghanistan, I hate to say it. I hate to say I see no hope, but it's pretty bleak, isn't it, John?
Well, in both those places, there's a power vacuum. So Saddam was obviously a terrorist and a tyrant and just an evil person, but he kept all those different factions in Iraq in check and not killing each other.
Right.
And as soon as he went away, the Sunnis and the Shias are fighting. All the different families are fighting. So they're all just trying to.
And they've been fighting since they built the Temple of Ur.
Yeah, and exactly. All the different tribes have been fighting for thousands of years, and it's just not going to go away in a generation.
Wow. Well, that's I hope you feel though rewarded or fulfilled. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for.
I do personally, but I can understand why some people don't. And obviously,
you mean veterans?
Well, veterans and the civilian population.
Yeah, right.
Because neither mission turned out exactly how we would like.
Right.
But I know in my heart that I helped a lot of people, and I made a difference.
And right, we didn't score as many points as we wanted, but
right.
I mean. We did a lot of good, right?
And, oh, sure.
And I think some people think it wasn't a waste. I mean, there's a lot of good that came out of that. You planted seeds for people. And right now, some 13, 14-year-old kid who saw the opportunity, who's maybe now under control of Taliban, who knows if they're going to rise up again. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I just thank you for what you've done. And I'm very proud of you every step of the way. I know we had casualties, and again, you know, the score wasn't what we wanted it to be, but I mean, I still think we
that has nothing to do with the effort.
No, right.
That our
right.
guys gave. And I always say, guys, again, the thing I always want to harp on is the women, the Christy Van Lannens of the world, and these people that went out on these missions, these women did, and did an amazing job, because the Afghan females didn't really want much to do with the guys.
No, they really embraced our female soldiers. And it always kind of made me laugh that, oh, we're going to get females in combat. I'm like, well, I had a soldier that was in combat with me for a year.
Right.
What are you talking
That's
about?
That's front lines. Where they were going was front lines.
Yeah.
People don't realize
we
that
were
women
outside,
were on the front lines.
We were outside the wire every day of the week.
Exactly.
So we're going to be wrapping up, and we've got to get you back here. But I want to end again on the 30 years. You're obviously healthy. You're back in school learning more about an interest you have, photography, technology. You would encourage this career to some of our younger listeners, or you had it when you were 24. I mean, that's not old.
Yeah.
It's not young.
I got in a little bit older, and I think it actually kind of helped my career quite a bit. But I would definitely encourage people to think about the military. It's not, you know, there's obviously some aspects to it that aren't great. But overall, it was a great experience, and I wouldn't change a thing, except maybe getting cancer. That sucks.
There's a guy, you saw me go up to a guy, he had the Vietnam cap
on.
I said, hey, you know, I asked him where he was and when he was there, and I said, oh, that's a pretty crappy time to be there. He says, yeah, but you know what? It made me mad. It made me grow up more than anything. I have no idea where I was heading.
Totally changed who I was and made me a better person.
John Kramer, what an awesome. You're a great friend, a great patriot, a great American, and please, we're going to have you on again sometime and some of your buddies. Is that cool?
That'd be great.
Awesome. Appreciate it. One more time, the PACT Act.
The PACT Act.
If you think you have any issues from the burn pits in Iraq, we'll be back with more. We're talking about Packer training camp. When we come back, Mine or the Mayor, right after this.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
Welcome back to Maren Mino here on WGBW playing Jerry Lee Lewis, the killer. Your favorite.
Wild man.
Your favorite.
Didn't pay his taxes.
And he married his 13-year-old cousin. Other than that, seems great like
guy.
A good guy.
He's got great music. Great music, but a little different.
John Kramer joining us. What an interesting gentleman, isn't he? He's like one of my heroes. And people throw around the word hero too much. He's a hero.
Yeah. That.
He's a hero.
Today was great. I enjoyed talking about the Day of Giving with one of our larger companies here in the community, and then we get John on here.
And now we're talking about Packer football.
We are, and then we're setting up for EAA tomorrow, too. Yep. We've got some guests lined up. But yes.
Hope the weather is better than it is outside our window
tomorrow.
Lightning and thundering like crazy. Mike Clemens, you there?
Mino.
How are you?
Jim, good to hear you guys on the radio.
Great to have you on. Really appreciate this. Are you up in Green Bay or still driving up from the southern part of the state?
No, one reporter, Rob Reichel, just texted me. He's in Fond du Lac, said the skies are black, and then he shot me a little video, and it's like hail coming.
Oh, really?
So I'm here every day for the next 5 weeks. I'm actually out of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
But I've been covering the team full-time. This will be my 19th season.
Wow.
I got started. I was working for a TV newsroom. I kind of snuck in my sophomore year at UWM because I was bored with class, and I was shooting camera. And it was a Friday, and a reporter named Greg Muse says, all right, well, that's it for this morning show. He goes, can you help me cover the Packers game on Sunday? I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah. And so he picked up the phone, and it went like this. Hey, Lee, it's Greg, TV 18, Milwaukee. Yeah, I need two for Sunday. Pick it up with Linda? Okay, great. And he just called Lee Remmel. We got two passes, and the next thing you know, I'm on the sidelines, and there's Bart Starr with the headset on coaching. And I'm like pinching myself. Are you kidding
That's
me?
That's awesome.
Well, you know, the cool part, we mentioned Linda. She pretty much, Lee Remmel and Linda, they kind of ran that place. That's, you're bringing back some good memories when you bring up those names.
I mean, I owe so much to Lee. He was such a good guy, and, you know, the press box named after him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Boy, his life was the Packers, though, right? I mean, I got to know him a little bit. And
here's what happened, Mary. I mean, he was a kid kind of stringing for the Shawano newspaper. He's actually from Shawano.
Yep.
And so they said, go down and cover these Packers games. And, you know, that's where maybe there's 8,000 or 9,000, 10,000 people there. But right. Kid on the sidelines, stringing, getting some quotes and all that for the people back in their newsroom. But he got to watch Don Hutson play. So that was, you know, the last connection to the Don Hutson teams, you know, was him and Art Daly and those guys. And there was one time when one of the guys who was a feature writer for the Journal Sentinel wanted to do a piece on him. And this is 15 years ago. And I was still working in the media auditorium, and Lee came in with a stack of tapes. He says, Mike, do you mind? Go, oh, no, no. And I actually went down and stopped while I was editing and went down and joined him. He brought down the big screen in the media auditorium, and he played tapes that they now have of Don Hutson for like an hour, because he's like, this guy is so underrated. People just don't realize how tremendous this guy was. And, you know, he looked like, you know, Jerry Rice or James Lofton with a leather helmet on. He was so ahead of his time the way he played football.
Boy, things have changed over the years as far as like covering an NFL locker room, though, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, Bob McGinn, the great longtime columnist, you know, the PR folks there are kind of with walkie-talkies, and they stand and listen to your questions. And
yeah.
You know, like sort of the media police. You know, McGinn says, Mike, he goes, I remember where, you know, you could sit there and talk to Lynn Dickey. And then Lee would come up and say, hey, would you guys turn off the lights when you're done?
Yeah,
oh, sure. And they would just sit there and talk football for like 3 hours.
Yes, and total access to the locker room pretty much anytime you wanted to go in.
You know, but
right.
I hear that, and it has changed. Now that it's changed a little bit for the better, right? It's more profitable. I think they take
not
better
for the media.
Well, but they
do
take
you think, better, Mike? I don't think it's changed better for the media. Do you?
No, not really. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that it's obviously great about this job, but you know, one thing that I don't understand is like, you know, feature writers like Lori Nichol. She would go to Greg Jennings' house,
yeah,
and meet the wife and see the kids and then, you know, talk about his life growing up with a, you know, the son of a pastor in yep. Kalamazoo and those kinds of things. They don't set that up anymore.
Mm-mm, yeah.
And you know, it's like Jerry Kramer says, man, the money really changed this thing. That's the one thing is that they have become more private citizens because nearly all of them are millionaires. Well, and in kind of a crazy world, you understand that. But the other thing is this. Twitter, when social media came in, these guys have really, you know, changed their lives in terms of hanging out and shooting pool at a local bar and that kind of thing.
And you talked about the money. I just want to say this: when the guys used to come on my Sunday night show, McCarron and I, or the Lynn Dickey show, whatever. And what they would get for coming on, Jim, was a gift certificate for an oil change. And you know what? If we didn't have it. When I was in the locker room a day later, I said, hey, do you have that certificate?
I know.
They still yeah. want that free oil change.
Yeah, sure. Right. Exactly.
It has changed a lot. And just even the last 20 years, you said 19, you've been covering the Packers. And I think on the positive, I think they do protect the players a little bit more. I think the fan experience, I mean, it was probably great 20 years ago. But you got to admit, those Jumbotrons, of course, you cover the Packers, so you saw them when they unveiled them on Monday, you know, twice the size, and I thought they were pretty good before. You know, the music is good. I like the experience. I like going to the games. You can watch it on TV, but, boy, to be there, and with the flyovers especially, it's special energy there. Would you think that's still there?
The flyovers, and
just
stuff,
the, just
sure.
the whole ambiance.
Yeah. Well, to me, some of these stadiums, and you know, go to a Bucks game, and even Brewers now, when the roof is closed, it's almost fatiguing how loud the music is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
non-stop.
The hometown crowd is like worn out by the third quarter.
Right. I
Let
agree.
Let me tell you a quick story about Monday though. Shareholders meeting.
Right.
Brian Gutekunst goes up there, does his presentation, and then walks off because he goes back to the office. But he pretty much run down what they got in the draft. And then Mark Murphy comes up and says, okay, now I'd like to say a few things about Aaron Rodgers. And I'm sitting there in the front row on the visitor's bench with 8,000 people behind me, and there's about 20 clowns behind me. They're going to start going, boo. And Mark goes, no. Now listen, he was one of the greatest players. He had a remarkable career here for 18 years here in Green Bay, and someday we're going to retire his jersey. And then that turned into a nice, polite, moderate applause, and he moved on. So I tweeted that with a picture of Mark. You're very limited about the shareholders meeting, about recording it and that kind of thing. But, I've got my recorder for notes. I have a 500,000 views. People are in disbelief that anybody booed, or if they did, they should never be Packer fans. I mean, you talk about touching a nerve. It's crazy on Twitter.
It's crazy how I would agree with that. We're way past the X's and O's of playing football. You know, it's just more about, you know, the person and their personality. But I'm with Mark Murphy. I think Aaron Rodgers, as Mark Murphy put it, is a complicated fella. I'm glad he was here, but I'm okay with where we're going. I think Jordan Love's going to be awesome. Awesome. Look forward to meeting you on the field. Johnny and I are going to be covering the Packer training camp as well. Look forward to working with you with Civic Media.
Mike,
well
Clemens,
said,
Civic
guys.
Media.
Thanks, Mino. Thanks, Mayor.
Mike, right. It's great talking to you again, buddy.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Thanks, brother. All right, we're wrapping it up. I'm going to be over at Channel 5 with Lisa Malik at 9 o'clock. If you want to tune in, we'll talk about the show.
And I'll be at the community shelter, and then we'll both be at EAA tomorrow.
Thanks. See ya.